order. Roll call.
Chairman Crosby?
Here.
Commissioner Cragen?
Here.
Commissioner Armalis?
Here.
Ms. Fishman?
Here.
Okay. Are there any other Plan Commission members on the phone line? Okay. So
you don't
have with us yet Commissioners Kirk, Gottlieb, or Kilbride. But we anticipate that Commissioner Kirk will be on in just a moment.
Okay, great. Can we just go ahead and proceed with approval of the minutes?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Did anyone have any issues with our meeting minutes from our meeting on March 3rd, 2020?
No.
Okay. So we need a motion to approve?
We do.
I approve.
You have a second?
I could second.
Okay.
All right.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion carries.
Okay. Let's just go ahead and just move on to the
Yes, let's move on to the plan. Why don't we have John, who is here with us in the room. John, if you'd like to be on camera, I will gladly give you my computer, or we can...
I don't need to be unless you are all missing seeing my lovely face.
All right. So, John, why don't we have you walk us through the changes that were made to the plan since
you bet.
The last meeting.
All right. So, hello, everybody. I hope, first and foremost, everybody is doing well. For those of you that can't see, Lisa, Chairman Crosby, and I are sitting at least 10, 15 feet apart from each other. So, I'm going to go through the changes, the amendments that are made to the draft plan. I listened very carefully to the recording of the last Plan Commission meeting twice, notes, in addition to the conversation that was had throughout the course of the meeting. One of the most helpful things was at the end of the meeting, Chairman Crosby and another commission member articulated and ticked off a list summarizing the amendments that were recommended by the Plan Commission. I was able to track them very efficiently and address them very specifically. And I addressed all of the recommendations by the Plan Commission. So I'm hoping this is pretty straightforward. I'm going to highlight and just go through what amendments were made as opposed to going through the whole document. The first change that was made was on page 2 of the plan. In the section that is listed, context limitations, it's the lower half of page 2. There was, if you recall, reference in there to about a sentence referring to about 15 to 20% of a mixed income building. No more than 15 or 20% of those units should be affordable. That was a sentence that was causing some consternation. It wasn't worded well, so the recommendation was to eliminate that sentence. And the reference to that 15 to 20% mix of affordable units. So that reference has been eliminated from the context limitations section on page 2. The next recommendation by several different Plan Commission members is located on page 3. And it is in the section referred to as defined by the community, which is the second half or lower half on page 3. This talked about the need for and the benefit of and the value of affordable housing in the River Forest community. There were several suggestions about inclusive language in there about how affordable housing in River Forest was good for everybody in the village, not just those living in affordable housing. So this section has been bolstered and reinforced to include more language in there about the benefits and the value of affordable housing for the entire River Forest community. So that section has been rewritten. Also in this section is language that includes the terminology that was provided by Opportunity Knox, and the specific terminology recommended by one Plan Commission member to include was the quote, integrated supportive housing. So the term integrated supportive housing was also included into the need for and importance of affordable housing, and the need for integrated supportive housing was added to the same section on page 3 under as defined by the community. The next thing, next change is on page four. There was a lot of discussion about and some recommendations for including data with regard to the sort of a snapshot of River Forest, if you will. And there was, this is probably the biggest source of conversation at the last meeting. And there was discussion about census data. There was discussion about the American Community Survey. Where we landed with it, there wasn't 100% agreement, but where we landed and the specific recommendation at the end of the meeting by the Plan Commission was to include data from the American Community Survey to provide sort of a snapshot. So not a detailed analysis of the data, but to put the data in here so that people could see the data, interpret it as how they see fit, I guess is the best way to describe the discussion. And so what I did by this is a couple of things. On page four, I included at the bottom of the tables of information, what is affordable, section three, page four, that is provided by the Illinois Housing Development Authority and the state that we have to abide by. I then also created a section below that that talks about River Forest Housing Snapshot. And I indicate that in addition to the information provided by the state Housing Development Authority, income and housing information for River Forest is provided in Appendix A, River Forest Snapshot. The snapshot is intended to provide context for the River Forest community at the time this plan is being developed, based on best available data from the U.S. Census and the 2014-2018 American Community Survey five-year estimates. And again, in listening to the minutes and recording of the Plan Commission meeting twice, the end recommendation after debating different data sources specifically was U.S. Census and the American Community Survey. So picking up on that addition or reference on page four, I also included a new appendix. And this would be starting on page eight of your packet or plan. And it's Appendix A, River Forest Housing Snapshot. And what I have in here is some key takeaway bullets, which summarize and bring to the surface some of what is included on the following pages of tables of information, data drawn right from census and right from the American Community Survey four-year snapshot. So you can see River Forest housing tenure on the bottom of page eight, owner occupied versus rental occupied. 2018 River Forest owner households by income. 2018 River Forest renter households by income. 28, and then on page 10, 2018 River Forest households by home value. 2018 River Forest households by rent. And then on page 11, the housing cost burden information provided by the community survey 2014 to 2018. And this is using HUD's 30% of income standard as a means of examining affordable housing index across the country. So this data was taken again from US Census and from the 2014 to 2018 American Community Survey for affordable housing using HUD's 30% affordability index as discussed by the Plan Commission. The next change was on page six. Page six, if you refer to that on the plan, includes possible other considerations. And this was grown from, I think, two to three to four to five. And the one that we added on this one was a new bullet number five as directed by the Planning Commission. It is important to note that TIF funds are eligible for the provision of affordable housing. And when appropriate, the village should consider leveraging TIF funds to support affordable housing initiatives. If you remember two meetings ago, the Plan Commission discussed TIF, city or village staff, myself and the attorney discussed it and didn't think it was the appropriate place in this document to mandate or put in standards that TIF funds had to be used for affordable housing, the TIF districts, and that was our report last meeting. And after further discussion, the Plan Commission agreed with that, but felt strongly that the availability of funds for affordable housing need to be put in here as a reminder, as opposed to simply relying on state terminology, which can be buried deep into state legislative terminology or acts And rather than having someone have it to look it up, we would put it in here. So the Plan Commission's direction was add an item number 5 under possible additional considerations stating that TIF funds were eligible for the provision of affordable housing, 1, and that 2, when appropriate, the village should consider leveraging TIF funds for the provision of affordable housing initiatives in River Forest. So that has been added under possible additional considerations. So at the last Plan Commission, those were the changes. So eliminating the text referring to 15 to 20% mix of affordable use on mixed income buildings, page 2. Page 3, strengthening the language about the provision of affordable housing and why that is good for everybody in the village, page 3. The next addition was specifically to use the terminology provided by Opportunity Knox, that term being integrated supportive housing, and putting that into and part of the language on page 3 that's been added. To provide a snapshot of data specifically from the U.S. Census and the American Community Survey as data information. So the reference for that is page 4, and there's a new 5 or 6 page appendix added at the end of the plan providing that data. And then to add on page 6 under additional considerations, a 5th bullet that talked about TIF fund eligibility and TIF funds being used where appropriate for affordable housing initiatives. So those were the 6 specific recommendations that the Plan Commission gave me to make at the last meeting. So the next thing I want to do is, I know Mr. Lauber tried calling me or did call me and left me a message over the weekend. I received his memo dated today, and I got this afternoon. So I went through his memo as well just before the meeting, so I can pick up on this. And I know Dan will want to speak as well, but I want to address some of the issues identified in his memo. So I'm referring now to Dan's memo, Dan Lauber's memo on page 1 of his memo dated today. So he lists 4 different bullets on the first page. The first one, and I will state that all of the bullets on this first page have been discussed at more than one Plan Commission meeting regarding this plan. So none of these items on page 1 are new. In fact, if you listen to the minutes of the meetings from the last several at the Plan Commission, these items have been discussed. So need to recommend amending the River Forest Comprehensive Plan to establish a policy to preserve existing single family for affordable households with modest incomes. The objective of preserving affordable affordable housing and protecting and enhancing affordable housing is in multiple locations in the comprehensive plan, and I've cited those before, the pages and the sections, so that's already in there. It's not a mandate, but it's an objective, which is what a plan should be. The second bullet is the need to recommend adoption of precise TIF policy for TIF districts. We discussed this at the last meeting, and the recommendation from myself, staff, and attorney was that specific policy that TIF funds should be used for this not be in here, but that we bring to light the fact that TIF funds are eligible for affordable housing, that where appropriate, the village should consider using
them.
Don't
do that, honey.
So the second bullet, the Plan Commission, after discussing last time, was not to have a specific policy to use TIF funds, but to highlight the fact that TIF funds could be used for it where appropriate. That change has been made. The need to recommend a zoning ordinance to provide for incentivized inclusionary zoning. This was discussed in the Plan Commission in previous meetings, decided not to have specific language and recommendation about incentivized inclusionary zoning in the zoning ordinance at this time. And a specific policy that at least 15% of dwelling units and the new development shall include multifamily shall be affordable. This was discussed at a couple of meetings, and the recommendation was not to include that specific number at this time. On the next page, page 2, affordable housing need, page 3. I think the terminology is talks about the overall makeup and spirit of the community. Mr. Lauber is suggesting that we use inclusiveness and diversity as opposed to overall makeup and spirit. He brought this up at the last meeting as well. There was no recommended after hearing testimony, there was no recommendation by the Plan Commission to make this change. I don't think it's necessary. First paragraph on page 5, potential lands and buildings of affordable housing. We talked about this as well, about reflecting where existing affordable housing exists right now and the need to protect and enhance that existing affordable housing. This is where it exists now in the village. page five incentives, zoning mandates. I know Mr. Lauber mentioned before, he didn't even think this needs to be in here. Again, these are options. This is not an option the village is choosing. It's just laying out what other communities sometimes will do and options. So he recommends, he's like, yeah, I don't even know why this is being mentioned. It's mentioned, but it's not recommended, so it's context. And then zoning bonuses, again, this was discussed before, and there was no recommendation to include the language in here about zoning bonuses. Same thing then on the next page, page three, preferred incentives. This has already been discussed. What he's bringing up here has been brought up in previous meetings. And at the last part of that paragraph he has under preferred incentives on page six, he talks about the village need to commit to preserving existing affordable housing. While there is a goal to do so, while there's a recommendations in the comprehensive plan, also further bolstered by this plan for affordable housing, there is no mandate and or specific requirement that affordable housing has to be protected or preserved. And I think a good example of this is the two individuals we had, they came here at the last meeting who lived in affordable housing up on North Avenue condominium building, and all the tenants of that building want to get together to sell their property. Right now there is no restriction or requirement that says it has to continue to be used for affordable housing. It could be, and the village may work to see if that happens, but there isn't a requirement that it be. And that was discussed, and consensus of the plan commission members were to not have that requirement go in either. And then page seven, he states the goal, and this is his page three, the goal should be to exceed 10%, not just reach 10%. That goal of 10% is one of the three goals that you can select as stated by the state of Illinois. They talk about you can have goal number one, goal number two, or goal number three. Goal number three is to hit that 10% mark. So what we say is a goal is to reach 10%, because right now we're deficient 10%. So if we exceed it, that's fine, but the goal is to, as stated, was to hit that 10% mark. And there's been no plan commission discussion to revise that goal, even going back three plus meetings from the plan commission. Then he's got some comments on his memo, page four, page referring to page 10. The home values, Mr. Lauber states here that the American Community Survey is not very reliable. This was sort of my consternation about putting data in here. Some people like the data, some people don't. Some people use the data to say one thing, some people use the same data to say something else. After a lot of discussion, the recommendation was to use American Community Survey data. There's community survey data that is taken every year. Then there are also the four-year averages over 2014 to 2018. The affordability index and the 30% of income is in the 2014 to 2018 American Community Survey data, which is why we used it. So we used both the American Community Survey and we used the U.S. Census rather than using MLS. We used government databases. And that was the specific direction given by the Plan Commission. And then the housing cost burden, and he can articulate this a little bit more. He thinks our narrative talking or the understanding of the cost burden is misunderstanding of what it says. I've bounced this off a couple of folks in our office that do nothing but work with data, market, and housing, and they think it is accurately stated. And the data and the tables and the charts are directly from the data sources. Those aren't interpreted. Those are actual data sources. I think his issue is with our sort of key takeaway bullets. So the majority of what he states has been discussed previously by the Plan Commission, and no action was recommended to be taken. And he states he doesn't think the American Community Survey is a reliable data source. The direction given by the Plan Commission was to use the American Community Survey. It's what most communities use as opposed to MLS. And with that, I can answer any questions, but that should highlight all the specific direction given by the Plan Commission and just a touching on everything that Mr. Lama brought up in his memo.
Sure. So. Let's just open up for questions. Do you all have any questions for John regarding the changes that we requested? Anyone? No?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Oh, wait, I have a couple questions.
I can ask
that. Go ahead, Robert.
All right. So, one thing that did strike me was And Dan brought it up also, but there's the these corridors that you have Harlem Avenue, North Avenue, I believe Madison. And when I, the little bit of research that I did do in the multiple listing service did show that there is some affordable housing in the Lake Street area. So then I kind of thought, I was trying to just come up in my mind with, what do we call this? Are these busy street corridors, or is there a proper name for them? And why isn't Lake Street included then also?
Well, the focus on North Harlem and Madison is consistent with the language and terminology and policy in the comprehensive plan. There may be affordable units scattered in different locations. There are some, I know there are some duplexes in town that exist within what look like single family structures from the outside, but may be duplexes or units inside. I think there's actually a couple of coach houses in town in the single family residential neighborhood. So this doesn't preclude affordable housing from existing and or being proposed elsewhere. It sort of designates and prioritizes the focus areas where the village has the majority of its existing affordable housing stock. So this plan, nor the comprehensive plan, precludes affordable housing from any place else, but it identifies the areas where the majority of it exists in the village and the focus to try to preserve and protect it where it exists at a minimum.
Actually, there was quite a bit near Lake Street. I mean, more than maybe you think. There was quite a bit. I'm just telling you what I saw in my research, and it just keeps striking me why those three corridors. I know you pointed out, that's a good point. It is in the comprehensive plan there, but it just struck me as the busy street corridor, and it, somehow that's, to me, it's kind of negative. I don't know why. I guess because busy street corridors. Kind of negative.
Carrie, did you have some questions?
I did. First, I want to say thank you very much. I know you just said the commissioner, but I know it was I was one of the people very vocal about including data, specifically the extra data you put in Appendix A, and I want to say thank you very much. I appreciate that those charts are there. I think they give a much better understanding of the context of our community, especially with median versus average for all those categories. The two chart, or I guess the in the key takeaways and in the charts, I understood the first six bullets of the key takeaways. And then I thought I understood the charts at the end, but I didn't understand them when I read the key takeaways. Could you explain the undersupply and oversupply? Because that I was confusing to me and I hadn't seen it described that way. I think I'm interpreting it, but I'm not sure I am. And so if I'm getting it wrong, I might, someone else might also.
Yeah, and this is, this is the most confusing stuff to interpret, which is one of the reasons why I don't necessarily like to have the housing costs. The other data is very straightforward. It's very easy to understand. It's just data. But the housing cost burden is a little bit more confusing. So if you look at the owner-occupied housing income per unit comparison, and you look at the housing costs here, you've got, at the bottom, you've got the income levels. So you've got, again, I'm looking at the top on page 11, the top chart. And if you look at the far right, that blue column, that's for incomes of $150,000 or more, home values of $450,000 or more. And what that shows is that for people in that income bracket, there's a number of opportunities for housing in River Forest for people in that income bracket that don't push them beyond that 30% standards and means of putting 30% of their income toward housing. In fact, they're in a position to spend considerably less of their income percentage on housing because they make a lot of money. And people who are looking to hit that 30% mark on housing because they make so much may have to literally look for housing more expensive than River Forest has to offer to hit that 30% mark, because we might not have homes that hit a 30% of their income because it's a big number. So what that shows is that the higher end, what this reflects is we have expensive homes in River Forest and we have people with big incomes. Mm-hmm. So it shows that at the household incomes and home values less than 150 annual income, or home values less than 450,000, that's where you begin to see a deficiency of that housing supply in River Forest. So those are red. So for those other lower income brackets, there is a general lack or a lower percentage of housing affordability that meets those income levels. When you get to $150,000 a year income level, there's a lot of housing that meets that need, or to not exceed the 30% income gap. That's what that means. And then for owner-occupied, to sort of get to those same numbers, it shows that for people that really don't make, that are really, really at the low income level and the gross rent level, there's a lack of supply at the very, very affordable range, and there's a lack of really, really high-end rental at the other end of the range. And the rental that's sort of in the middle, we have rental to meet that demand. So owner-occupied housing, generally speaking, the top table, if you're in the upper income bracket, you have a lot of options and you're not going to hit that more than 30% burden. If you make less than $150,000 a year, based on River Forest housing stock, you may very well hit that burden, income burden or housing burden of having to spend more than 30% of your income on housing. So all the other income levels below $150,000 show that there's a burden, housing burden below that, which is the red, and all the income levels below $150,000. The renter occupied, again, shows the blue in the middle and the red on the extremes. And what that means is blue means there's a decent supply. So if you're in the middle income, middle renter monthly rate, there's rental units in River Forest that will meet your need. And there isn't a big burden in terms of not exceeding that 30%. But if it's a very low income level, it's tough to find affordable housing and not exceed that 30% burden. And if you are at the very high income level, there's very little really high-end rental in River Forest that's going to get you at that 30% high income rental level. So for owner-occupied, the chart above, plenty of higher income housing without being burdened. Everything below the highest level or 150, there's a burden. For rental, there's a burden at the very, very low end. And really not a burden at the high end because you can afford anything. But what that indicates is that there's a lack of really high-end rental is what that red means, more than a burden. It's a lack of. And if you're in the middle range of rental and income, there is a supply in River Forest. That's what those two tables mean.
While we have a moment, I just wanted to recognize the fact that Commissioner Kirk has joined the meeting, as well as Commissioner Scott Lee.
Oh, great.
So we have all
full,
members
full house.
Nice.
So hopefully that explains the blue bar means it's not a burden and we've got some options. The red bars mean it is or could be a burden and we're missing options, if that makes it easier. The top one is for owner-occupied. The bottom is for rental. Does that make sense a little, maybe?
No.
Who said no?
That would be Ross.
What didn't you understand about it? I can try to explain it a little better.
No, I'm fine with your explanation. I just don't accept it.
Okay, what do you think?
The commissioners that just joined us, you said it was Kirk, Biden, Gottlieb. Did you all, I opened it up for questions from the commissioners earlier. Did you all have a chance to review this, and do you have any questions for John while we have him? No, we're good.
I have one more question.
Yeah, if you need I know people are muting in and out, which we appreciate, but don't forget to unmute your question. So Commissioner.
Yeah, Craig, go ahead.
Again, I really appreciate you adding the language for opportunity knocks. Specifically on pages 2 and 3 with the integrative supportive housing called out. My question is to page 6 under additional considerations. I know we added a fifth. Is there one of the considerations listed that could best capture the recommendations made by Opportunity Knox from Phil Carmody's March 2nd letter, where he specifically requested that that there would be zoning that would allow for opportunities for integrated supportive housing for residents with intellectual and developmental disabilities and or village support for garnering resources to assist those. Is there a recommendation we can make specifically to besides what was the edits that were made that I appreciate on page 2 and 3?
And the short answer is, yeah, we could put that in there. I don't have it in front of me, but yeah, that's, so the bottom line is we can add a consideration like that. So we include in there bullet number 3 or item number 3 under that list. Talks about explore amending, thanks Lisa, explore amending the zoning ordinance for the, to consider ADUs. I suppose we could put a 6th one in here, maybe underneath that one, that says explore amending the zoning ordinance to specifically accommodate, and then insert the language for Opportunity Knox. So it can be another specific, you know, exploratory zoning amendment recommendation. I'm just trying to think out loud here, but
yeah, I just think it's important because I know as these are all residents in our community who are served by Opportunity Knox, and they put a lot of time into that letter. That right. If they pursue funding later on for that type of supportive housing, that it would be helpful for their to support them that we've called it out so they can point to our own documents and saying, you know, this is recognized by our village.
Sure. And so I guess.
Is this the ice cream? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, so I guess. To respond to that, we can certainly include a recommendation. And I guess what I would do is just to make it sequentially make a little bit more sense. I would push down under possible additional considerations. I would push down 4 and 5 to become the new 5 and 6. And I would insert a new item number 4 underneath the existing 3. Existing 3 talks about accessory dwelling units. I would insert a new one after that that talks about experimenting the zoning ordinance or other appropriate village, you know, regulations or documents to better consider accommodating integrated supportive housing for, and then we could use the language from Opportunity Knox. But I think that's where, if we did it, that's where and how it ought to go, if that gets at what you're talking about.
That would. Thank you.
Okay. That's easy. That's very simple to do. I can do that if they take
can
action on this
that?
With the direction to change that. I can make that change.
Right.
Easily,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions from the commissioners?
And I guess I'll just circle back on the. I was looking through here specifically on the Lake Madison North Avenue versus. Not Lake Street. I just want to mention sort of where
that is.
And how it's referenced. And what it really says is, and this reflects the land use plan, the comprehensive plan, and where multifamily mostly is in the village, understanding that most affordable housing isn't going to be via single family, except through the potential provision of ADUs, which we've said to explore. It's on the top of page 5. It says, the best opportunities for creating additional affordable housing are primarily on properties along the village's perimeter corridors, Madison Street, North Avenue, and Harlem Avenue. But this is where the majority of affordable housing is now. So the majority of the multifamily housing zoning currently exists to accommodate multifamily housing. It's where the zoning exists. But then it goes on to say, and possibly other locations as are designated as appropriate for multifamily and mixed-use development. So it doesn't, again, it doesn't preclude other areas. It just says the best opportunities are here, but could also be in other areas of the village. So it's not closing the door on anything. It's not giving a preference. It says the likely best locations are here, but it could be anywhere where we could do multifamily or mixed use.
Right.
So I just wanted to clarify it doesn't preclude that or doesn't necessarily steer it. It's a statement saying it's the best opportunity
sure.
for it.
Okay.
That's all.
The public, do we have anyone in the public that
Hi, sweetie.
thanks for doing the bridge.
We have Mr. Lauber. Shores is the only name.
I would like to I'd like to limit to 5 minutes since we've reviewed most of this stuff already in past meetings. I guess Dan is. Dan, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. I can.
Okay. Thank you. I'll keep it to 5 minutes. I will not go through all the misrepresentations John made of what I submitted and his lacking exclusion of the reasons why. But for example, with the zoning mandates, the reason I say delete it is it's illegal. So why would you put in that you're considering something that is illegal? It's a takings of property without just compensation. Aside from that, I my concern is with the housing cost burden. I think John has indeed misinterpreted this as I thought he was doing. The housing cost burden, according to HUD and basic planning theory, it's okay, it's healthy if you're spending less than 30% of your income on housing. When you start spending more than 30%, it's not healthy for your own household economy and for the economy in general. I think John has misinterpreted this to set 30% as the goal of what people should be spending on housing. There is absolutely nothing wrong if you're spending less than 30%. It's highly desirable if you're spending less than 30%. The smaller percentage of income you're spending on your housing, the better it is for you and for the economy, because there's money for you to spend in other areas of the economy. The table that he's produced there, and again, I like this. Have the precise table source from the American Community Survey is a serious misrepresentation of the situation. If we've got 515 households, whatever it is, that are spending, that are wealthy, they're spending less than 30% of their income on housing, there's nothing wrong with that. That is not indicative of an oversupply of housing. To interpret these figures as meaning there's an oversupply or an undersupply is absolutely false. The you have a lot of instances of households that when they first bought their home or started renting, they were spending more than 30% in order to get into River Forest. It was worth it to them, but as time goes on and their income has increased at a faster pace than their mortgage payments or the property tax or their rent, they're spending a smaller and smaller percentage of income on housing. That's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't know where anyone comes up with an idea in housing and planning practice that it's bad that people are spending less than 30% of their income on housing, and that indicates a shortage of more expensive housing. So I think this needs to be rethought. I think it needs to be corrected. Because this is a serious misrepresentation. I do not know why he is so reluctant to use the actual data that shows that 42% of our tenants are cost burdened, spending 30% or more on housing, and 28.9% of our homeowners with mortgages and 25.8% of our homeowners that have paid off their mortgages are cost burdened, and that indeed almost 30% of all River Forest residents are cost burdened. I don't understand why anyone would exclude that. I've done an awful lot of studies on affordable housing for cities as large as District of Columbia, Houston, Clark County, Nevada, Fairfax County, Lake County, Illinois, and we always include this data. That's what's expected from HUD. I cannot understand why, one, there would be a conscious effort to exclude this data from this, and two, again, tables, the charts on page 11 and the explanation of housing cost burden are just plain wrong. And I know you've got your consultant. You always want to believe your consultant, but I'm sorry, he's got it wrong here. And I will stake my reputation on it and my 40 years experience on affordable housing. That needs to be replaced with accurate information and correct understanding of this.
Dan, you've got about 1 minute left.
finally, there's nothing wrong with the goal to exceed 10% of affordable housing. At what John didn't mention from my notes, from my written testimony that I submitted, is that the 10% goal in the state act was simply what Ricka Sloan thought she could get passed by the legislature. There's nothing wrong, and it would look even better for this town if we had a goal to exceed 10%. I think most residents of River Forest have no problem with that. We are bigger than what this town used to be 30 years ago when we moved here, and more receptive to people that are not all wealthy. Otherwise, thank you. I appreciate the Plan Commission considering all this, giving me an opportunity to speak, but I urge you, fix this stuff on housing cost burden. It is just plain wrong. And John, please don't do the usual thing you do. Just accept this as maybe you actually got this wrong. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate your comments. Yeah, is there anyone else in the queue?
Is there anyone else on the line who wishes to make public comment?
Nope. Okay, so we'll close the public portion of the meeting. And so procedurally, what's next? Any changes that we want to make? We need to air that now. And then we need a motion to approve, someone to second it, and then we vote on it. And so this document is a recommendation to the village trustees for them to consider. It's a recommendation. They can modify it if they wanted to, correct? Yeah. Okay. All right, great.
And just for the one recommendation for
the Scott. Can't hear him.
Reiterate it to add a six for further consideration section on page six, a sixth bullet, which would be a new number.
Could you turn on your mic?
Yeah, I can't hear him.
Sorry. Yep, I'm sorry. So just to clarify, the one recommendation that we've heard discussed so far specifically is the recommendation to add a new possible additional consideration on page six. That would be to explore amending the zoning ordinance or other appropriate village regulations to accommodate potential provision of, and then use the opportunity Knox language into that. So out of everything we talked about this evening, that's the only specific commissioner that has made a recommendation for that include. So just to reiterate that.
And I do agree. I think that would be a nice little point to add to the list. As far as the Bobby, the issue as far as the corridor on Lake Street, I'm okay with the language that we have in here at the top of that page five. Just kind of noting that the Madison, North Avenue, and Harlem, that those are the best opportunities. It doesn't limit that, you know, that there wouldn't be affordable housing anywhere else beyond those streets, but that those are our best opportunity.
Given current development patterns, current zoning, mm-hmm. current values, and where we have planned for multifamily or mixed use, it's the most appropriate or likely locations. But then the language goes on to say, but could also be at other locations wherever we could accommodate multifamily or mixed use. So,
sure. So basically, at this point, I'm comfortable with where we're at with adding this extra bullet point from Opportunity Knox, adding that language in, and that is something that we can still vote on this evening, and then that would be added. For what the trust would see, correct? How does that?
Well, yeah, we can do that for sure. Yeah.
So I have it written down, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Explore amending the zoning ordinance or other appropriate village regulations to accommodate upgraded affordable.
Lisa, I can hardly hear you.
Oh. I'm sorry. Can you hear me
better now?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So where we're at is trying to get the language pinned down on item number six so that we don't have to bring it back again.
Right.
And what I had in my notes, and please help me, let's try and iron it out. Item number six explore amending the zoning ordinance or other appropriate village regulations to accommodate integrated, supportive, affordable housing.
Okay.
Could you say for residents with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Well, that makes it sound like that's the only thing though, right?
Marianne, that would be my only, I think that's who just spoke. That would be my concern as well, is in including that language, are we excluding other potential?
Right, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's a too narrow, yeah.
I understand. Along the same lines, I think on number two, we had language about investing in the affordable housing. I don't know if as part of that addendum, we can have bringing resources to assist that. I didn't know if there was a way to capture the third bullet point in Opportunity Knox letter about bringing resources to the community that would establish, meaning if someone like Opportunity Knox or like Marianne said, some other entity that served a community that needed supportive integrated housing wanted to pursue federal funds for HUD or some other resource that the village would back them. I don't know how best to do that language or if that's typical or not.
I would think that's got to be done on a case-by-case basis rather than a blanket we should support. I think there's enough language in here to support the initiative of somebody proposing something generally, and then sort of to support funding or pursue a funding beyond what the village is in charge of. I think that's got to be done on a case-by-case basis as opposed to putting in here language that would sort of bind or guide the village to support pursuit of other funding from other organizations. I don't know that. I'd be hesitant to put that language in here. And I don't think it's necessary with everything else we've got in here, but.
Okay, I'm fine with what we have. I just want to make sure to Lisa that if, I'm not sure how this gets transmitted, but if the March 2nd letter from Opportunity Knox can be transmitted to the Village Board of Trustees, I would appreciate that. So at least it's captured in how they described it also, in addition to this additional bullet point.
So let me just take a moment to explain the record that will be going to the Village Board. So the Village Board has asked that they be given more than one meeting to discuss this. If there is a recommendation made tonight, it will go to the Village Board on their meeting on Tuesday. Monday is Memorial Day. And then they would not take up a final decision on that plan until a future board meeting date. So they're asking for multiple meetings to discuss this. They recognize it's a significant policy decision and recommendation, and they want due time to consider it. So the record that I have started to assemble includes all of the meeting minutes that are available and have been approved to date, all of the written public testimony that has been provided. So Mr. Lauber has supplied us with a variety of exhibits and pieces of information. Those will all be included, the letter from Opportunity Knox. Ms. Rubin submitted a letter at one of the meetings as well. And then of course the board always has the opportunity to go back and review the audio recordings of any of the Plan Commission meetings. So there will be a complete record of information that goes to the Village Board on Tuesday. It will include the draft affordable housing plan. It will include the information that we have used from the state to develop our data, and also Mr. Housiel's PowerPoint presentation from last October. So it's a robust record. So to answer your question, Commissioner Cragen, yes, absolutely, we'll be submitting that over to them as part of the complete record.
And I think just to put the mind at ease of everybody who's listening, Dan and I disagree on a lot of stuff. We agree on some stuff. And regardless of interpretation of how those tables are summarized, the tables are exact data. There's no interpretation in the table itself. The table is the table from those data sources. I think the issue Dan has is with the inclusion of the tables in general and my key takeaways. The wisdom in putting this in an appendix, which is why I put it in an appendix as opposed to in the plan, the appendix can be debated, and the way it's worded can be debated. But even if that is reworded, and I don't think that it should or needs to be, but it doesn't directly change the plan language, the recommendations, the goals, the additional considerations, the TIF. It doesn't change any of that. It's just verbiage in the appendix, which is a supporting body of material. So that's why I decided to put all the data in an appendix, so it wouldn't directly impact the text and language of the plan itself. So.
No, I like that. I like having that as a separate document as part of this. So. Okay, so I think we're good with the language as far as that the opportunity knocks bullet point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. So, I'd like to move that we accept this plan with the changes that were made today that Lisa has documented.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second.
That was Commissioner Kilbride. So this is, let me make sure I understand, because Marianne, you just cut out there for a second.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just want to make sure. So this is a recommendation to approve the plan with the modification and addition of item number 6 under possible additional considerations. So a motion to recommend that the plan be approved by the Village Board pending that final change.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I would like to call a roll call vote. So just make sure when I call on you that you unmute your phone and speak loudly, please. Commissioner Fishman?
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Kilbride?
Yes.
Commissioner Armalis?
Yes.
Commissioner Cragen?
Yes.
Commissioner Kirk?
Yes.
And Chairman Crosby?
Yes.
I did get a message from Commissioner Gottlieb. Unfortunately, he had to step off the call. The motion is approved by a vote of 6-0 with one member absent.
Okay. Well, I guess I just want to thank everybody for their hard work on this. I know this took a lot of time away from your families and cleaning up your basements. I'm hopefully not from water. but thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And we'll surely have some other stuff coming in the pipeline here that we should address and deal with. Mm-hmm. Right?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Stay well.
So is there
motion to adjourn.
Is there any other additional public comment before we adjourn? All right. Motion to adjourn.
I move.
I second.
Commissioner Fishman, Commissioner Kilbride, was that a second, or Commissioner Cragen?
Period.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thanks, everybody.